Hello everyone, welcome to The Voice of Nursing. My name is Adrian Tracy, CEO of ICG Medical. And today we've got Louise Brady. Welcome Louise to The Voice of Nursing.
Hi Adrian, great to be here.
You're very, very welcome. Louise, tell us a bit about your background and how you got into nursing.
Well, as a young teenager, I thought I was destined for the stage actually and the theatre. But I was gently steered by my mum into the caring profession. So I started working in the kitchens in nursing homes at age 14. Which I absolutely loved. And being quite a good talker, sort of when I was taking the resident for breakfast, got talking to local people, loved building those relationships, and kind of from there decided at the tender age of 18, yes, I would do my nurse training. That's sort of where my career challenges lay.
Mm-hmm. And so you did your nurse training and you went into a hospital environment?
I did, yes. I've sort of undertaken many roles over the years. So I started with a baptism of fire in A&E in London.
Okay, right.
Which was absolutely fantastic. Great mentors, taught me a lot about medicine and surgery. But it was quite isolating because I was away from family and friends. Because I was sort of kind of did a year in A&E, came back and got a job on a medical surgical rotation in York, and that was fantastic as well. So yes, I have been in the hospital. Don't miss the night shifts. Used to feel quite poorly on the night shifts, but I've done my fair share of working on the wards over the years.
And talk us through, because now obviously, as I'm sure people are probably aware, you've moved into the primary care and community area. How did that sort of transpire going from hospital into the community setting?
I did 6 months in gynecological theatres, and I got the opportunity to do a secondment into one of the specialist services, urology specialist services in Greater Manchester. So I did 6 months there, and from there I went to work under a district nursing team in central Manchester, and I became a community nurse by default really. But I kind of found my niche working with local people in community. And that's the first time really in the years that I've been nursing in secondary care that I've felt part of a team and felt that I could make a real difference to the people we serve.
Fantastic. And talk us through, you know, just for some of us out there, that what's the difference between that sort of, you know, that medical surgical role on a ward versus, you know, the community role? You know, because people are looking at different career opportunities, different types of patient care.
Yeah, I think it's highly autonomous, and it's quite complex. And when you walk into a patient's home, you see the real raw reality of that. You know, so working in Greater Manchester, you know, it's an area with high levels of poverty, deprivation. We get to see people in the natural environment, and that's a real plus as a primary community nurse, because you're actually able to tap into people's strengths. And focus on that, as well as obviously any issues and illnesses and problems they have. I suppose that some of the downsides are you've got really that strong camaraderie and that team around you in a ward-based setting. So you're able to quickly, you know, escalate your concerns or go to the senior nurse or the doctor. In the community, you have to have highly skilled awareness of the potential issues and problems. And that's why, that's why training, education of community nurses is so, so vital and important, so that they're well prepared for the role and they know what to do, when they take back home at clinic or at base, and how to escalate those concerns.
And you mentioned about the area you cover is Greater Manchester.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
And obviously, that can't, you know, that, as you mentioned before, when we've spoken off camera, you were talking about some of the challenges within Greater Manchester, you know, lower life expectancy and the context of the area.
Absolutely. So, you know, health inequalities are deep rooted in Greater Manchester. So, for example, older women, die at an earlier age compared to the rest of the UK. And people are developing more long-term conditions. There are high levels of deprivation. But with that, for me as a nurse, looking at health inequalities, it's not just about the economics or tackling some of the social wider determinants of health. That's really important. But reducing health inequalities is about restoring relationships. So being a primary community nurse, that is fundamental to our care and our work. So, you know, going into people's homes, seeing people on a regular basis, we are able to talk through some of those really wicked issues. So whether that's somebody that's struggling financially or they need signposting to other services, you know, for carer support, those are the things that perhaps are undertaken by nurses behind closed doors and are not as visible to the general public, but they are so important to patients, carers and families.
No, I agree. What I suppose we've been talking about, you know, there's a big move obviously from getting people out of hospitals and, you know, working more in that community setting. Yes. Obviously the NHS have come up with their long-term plan.
Yes, yes.
But, you know, how's that sort of integrated with the community area or the PCMs?
Yeah, so the new GP contract is very ambitious. I'm cautiously optimistic, I'll say, Adrian. But unfortunately, nursing workforce and numbers in terms of the additionality of the new GP contract and the onset of PCM is not included within that. So for general practice nursing, you know, they are delivering the long-term plan, especially for patients with long-term conditions. So they work across the life course from public health right through to palliative care and deliver about 70% of long-term condition care within their clinic. So it's absolutely crucial within the future of primary care network that their voice is heard strongly and clearly, because, you know, they are the infrastructure really for the long-term plan.
Mm-hmm. I suppose as we've come across very much with nurses, they're doing more of a different role now, aren't they?
Yes.
You know, and they're doing more clinical areas, more responsibility. I suppose the ANPs, the practice nurses, you know, running practices as opposed to the GPs. You know, there's a lot more going on these days, and that's one of the bulge bracket of the clinical profession.
Yes, definitely. As I say, I mean, you know, we're dealing with young children and families that come in for their vaccinations. And it's actually lovely to see, you know, years later, I've worked at my practice for nearly 15 years, and I remember vaccinating, you know, little Johnny and Ben, and then they come in, age 18 and 19, for their meningitis vaccine before they go to university. So we build up that relationship with families across the life course. And there's not many areas of nursing where you see that, and through to old age.
That's true.
So it's quite a niche area. And it's a generalist area, so you get many nurses that like to specialise in certain long-term conditions, and they build up a real portfolio of work in those areas. I'm more a generalist, so you know, jack of all trades, master of many. So I know a little bit about a lot, but that's what keeps me interested.
No, I always remember when I've taken my lads to get their vaccinations when they're very small.
Yeah.
And I always remember how just great the nurses were, managed. They didn't cry, and I was like, "How do you do that?" It's just like I'm always amazed about how the nurses always have those softer skills.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't know where it comes from. I think it maybe, you know.
I think it's just
vocational, I suppose.
Yeah. I think before I became a mom, I was super, super nervous when dealing with children. I'm so frightened. You know, I've read all the academic papers, all the evidence, I've got all the training that vaccination, you know, was so important, you know, in terms of population health. But I think when you've had your own children, you know, you realise, and you're able to, I suppose, like you say, offer that listening ear and reassurance to families to say, actually, you're doing the very best thing you can for your child.
Very good. And what would you know, looking back at your job at the moment then, what's the sort of most challenging aspect of it?
I think with anything, it's about behaviour change. And that's looking really quite deeply at health beliefs of the local population. So an example of that was, we see lots of patients with cardiovascular disease or respiratory illness, you know, and it's people may have smoked, it's changing habits of a lifetime, isn't it? And there are ways to do that, you know, and as community nurses, we're trained in that. So we're trained in coaching, mothers are trained in motivational interviewing. And it's not about waving that big stick and saying, right, you're going to go blind if you don't control your diabetes. You know, we have to be really sensitive to what's going on in people's lives, because if people have mental health problems, if they have family dysfunction, if they have trauma, you know, the last thing they want to talk about is their blood pressure or their diabetes control. So it's that holistic challenge, if you like, of getting to know the person, not necessarily the disease, getting to know the person and working through those goals, aspirations and values and what's important to them. That's probably one of the biggest challenges.
That must be very rewarding though, when you see, you know, the results coming from that.
Oh, it's wonderful, absolutely wonderful. And it can be something so small. So recently in my practice, we had I had a patient come to see me, lovely, lovely lady. And she said, you know what, Louise? She said, all these healthcare professionals are telling me that I need to lose weight. So I've decided to go swimming, but do you know what? I think they should do it with us. And I sat back and I thought, you know, she's got a point. She's got a point. So we set up a club at the practice, hashtag Donnybrook Dive. So we go.
We'll get that in the link. That's a good hashtag.
Yeah, so we go with the patients on a Monday evening to the local swim baths, and it's you know, £5, which is not too expensive. And we have a wonderful time. So we exercise, we chat, and what we're doing, we've turned it into a bit of a quality improvement project at practice level. So we're actually got the tape measure out, and we're measuring our BMI, and we're going on the scales, and we're losing gradually. And we think, you know, that's something that's role modelling for staff, but it's also great for patients, because they can see that we as healthcare professionals are just as challenged as they are when it comes to that behaviour change and sustaining that throughout life.
Well, everyone's fallible, aren't they? So, you know, that's great. Yeah. Too. We do some work with Teresa Chin and we nurses, and also the Cavill Nurses Trust, and they have the 10K for nurses.
Yeah.
And they say they're not bothered about how fast you run it, just that you're doing something.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for all of us, so it's challenging. But you imagine having living with 4 or 5 long-term conditions, you know, and perhaps debilitating pain. One of the ladies that comes with us, her name's Brenda, she won't mind me telling you, and she's had a stroke, she's had a, you know, quite a large CVA, and she says, you know, if I can do it, anyone can do it, and she's such a brilliant advocate. So having patient educators saying to other patients, come on, we understand how this feels, we know it's hard, and we know you don't want to go swimming, but, you know, on a Monday in October when it's cold and we can sit and watch telly. But actually, let's do it together. And that peer group support marries everybody, you know, and helps to get things going.
And tell us about some of the most memorable work you've done till now.
Oh, gosh.
I'm sure there's a lot.
Well, I had a rude awakening, really, in about 2014. And I've been in general practice a while. Kind of felt like I was going through the motions, ticking boxes. Didn't feel that I was doing meaningful work. And a post came up at the local clinical commissioning group, and it was for a diabetes nurse lead, just as a comment. So I took that, and I felt the responsibility that I had to look at the population and look how I could support and enable that population to make those changes. And I had no idea what I was doing, Adrian, to be quite honest with you. I was absolutely petrified. In walks a patient of mine this day and bangs his fist on the table. And he said, will you stop sending me text messages to come into your clinic? Don't you realise I've got a life? And I was quite shocked at his attitude. And anyway, so I turned the computer off, we sat down, and he told me he was a professional magician. And he went up and down the country, and the reason he couldn't make his appointment was because obviously this was his work, his bread and butter. And he did realise that, you know, his control could be better. He wasn't taking his medication. And I said, well, how can we help each other? And he said, well, I'll tell you what. He said, why don't we combine health and entertainment? He said, and what you need to do, Louise, is come out of that clinic and go into the community and meet people where they're at. So what we did, and this was in partnership with a fantastic diabetes coach, we arranged a magical diabetes evening in a cold November night. So we had optical illusions, we had patients with diabetes, we had GPs standing up, and allied healthcare professionals telling us all about their own. We had patients saying how wonderful it was that we'd have this show with the diabetes education attached to it. And from that, a peer group formed. And that's the kind of thing that drives me when people come together and, you know, so it's socially useful stuff. And we tend to see the patients that are always coming to the surgery or those that don't engage will engage with something like that because it's make it fun and they will come.
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's all about social. You know, you're quite active on social media, on Twitter.
I'm too active. My husband said, you need to stop tweeting. Too much screen time. And he's absolutely right. You know, tell the children that, don't you? Too much screen time.
But you've done some interesting things. Tell me about the Twitter disco.
Oh, my goodness, mate. The Twitter disco.
I can't believe I've only just heard about this today.
Yeah. Oh. Terrible.
Well,
so it started with a few friends on Twitter. So a great guy called John Walsh. You'll have to interview John.
Love
to. Fantastic guy. And a GP called Bruce Bromley from Manchester. And we just started tweeting some really cheesy 80s music one night with the hashtag Twitter Disco. And we found...
Talk me through the songs.
Sorry?
Tell me some of the songs.
Oh, well...
Classics. Okay.
ABBA, it started off quite cheesy, but then we used to have monthly themes. So we had like rock goth, so we had a rock theme, and then we had sort of World Music Day. So it was going, you know, quite well, and everybody started to join in. So we held these monthly discos, and we attached a charity each month, you know, to support both the NHS and voluntary care sector. And we have patients sending us private messages to say, you know, this is so much fun. I'm able to dance in my kitchen. I might not be able to get out to a regular disco because I'm disabled, but, you know, please keep this up. So we kept it up monthly, and we did BBC Music Day, asked us to hold a Twitter disco 2 years ago. And it's accumulated with patients, carers and staff standing on the Bridgewater Hall stage in Manchester and performing a song. So, you know, it's a fantastic vehicle for music and friendship. And although we take our job seriously, we don't take ourselves seriously. And it's such a fun thing really to do.
What's the hashtag?
Hashtag Twitter Disco.
That's literally it, Twitter Disco.
Yes. So we've actually pulled back a little bit. We used to hold a monthly disco and some live discos as well. And I think we've got one coming up for Pride in Manchester. So you'll probably see a flurry of tweets. But we've had people joining from all over the world. It's been amazing. It's been such good fun.
Well, you know, we'll have to get on that because we can, obviously this goes out to the US and goes to Australia and India and Israel now as well. So, and I think there's one going to be going out to Mexico in a couple of weeks' time. So, let's get the Twitter disco going worldwide. That'd be awesome.
That will. That'd be fantastic.
And talk us through. So you do some work on the appraisals area as well?
Yeah, so I kind of split my role between Greater Manchester as the primary community nurse lead, so that's things like developing nurse education, making sure that nurses feel confident in their roles, and supporting them really, you know, nurturing them, looking after students, and obviously, you know, the existing nurses are so important in terms of retention. So we need to look at the package, if you like, that General Practice offers both to existing nurses and to new nurses coming into practice as a first career destination. And one of the issues, it wasn't picked up by myself, it came from the Queen's Nursing Institute report in 2016. So, you know, 20% of nurses felt that appraisals weren't useful or meaningful, you know, to their everyday clinical duties. And please could we do something locally and look into this with nurses and find out, one, is appraisal important? And what we found was nurses were saving things up for that once a year meeting with their GP employer or their nurse manager. And, you know, didn't feel like that they could approach their employers, because it's quite difficult, isn't it? When you're looking at trying to get CPD, trying to get courses, and resources within general practice are really, you know, quite slim.
Okay. And what impact has that had then? Because I know you've got a blog that we can publish.
Yeah, I think it's been really positive, actually. So the nurses have said to me, you know, thanks for coming, thanks for asking, you know, because not everybody's asked the question. And our GP colleagues are fantastic, but often they're not the direct line managers for nurses. And if you've got a single-handed practice or one nurse and another nurse that works opposite each other, it can be quite isolating. And these nurses, you know, they've studied and continue to study and progress year on year. So they need an opportunity, you know, for that appraisal so they can get both constructive feedback and support and challenge around clinical, social and educational skills. So it's been very, very useful locally to look at that in its totality.
You mentioned about retaining nurses and obviously the general shortage that we have. It, obviously, I assume that we have the same issues in the community setting as we do in the medical surgical areas and specialist areas.
Yes, we do. Yes.
Don't suppose you've got the solution for that?
I don't have a solution. I wish I did. I don't think there's a silver bullet. I do think we are changing perceptions about what community and primary care nursing entails. Our district nurse colleagues particularly need that support, you know, to come into community care. They do such a complex, critical patient safety role within all our communities. And one of the best ways for new nurses to see what happens is to shadow, you know, your primary and community nurses and have placements within those surgeries, within those communities, so that you actually know, you get a good feel and insight into the complexity of care day in and day out. So that's the first thing. The second thing probably would be, you know, we do need more resource into primary and community care development. And I'm not sure where that resource will come from. We've had a wonderful initiative called the General Practice Nurse 10-Point Plan Aging. It was launched in, I think, 2016 by the previous Chief Nursing Officer. And that's enabled nurses to bid for some monies so that they can put some development behind quality improvement projects, you know, in partnership with patients and their practices. But again, these monies are not necessarily rolling year on year. And it'd be interesting to see how a long-term plan is going to be delivered without, you know, such a massive skill set of primary community nurses. Mm-hmm. So we definitely need that. The other thing that we've sort of led in Greater Manchester, I don't know if you've heard about it, is the group clinic model. So it's the first nurse-led model in the country, and that was led by Greater Manchester Practice Nurses. So we actually see patients with similar concerns or similar conditions in a group of between 8 to 10 patients. And this has really supported workforce retention in these nurses. It's brought the joy back to nursing, in one, to quote one nurse, and patients love it and they come bouncing out of the room. They get a cup of tea in the 90 minutes. They get to speak to their neighbours. And we found afterwards that the clinical outcomes are better in the group clinic compared to one-to-one, specifically for long-term condition care. So you're able...
It must be more social.
It is. And it's less daunting, some of the patients tell us, in a one-to-one. And we maintain that confidentiality, that privacy, because of an explicit process within the training that we do. You know, and we've seen some fantastic clinical outcomes, and we've had that published on the NHS England website, the Atlas of Shared Learning. So there is a model there that it's not the answer, but it certainly helps. We know it helps with retaining the existing workforce because it's a different care model that kind of breaks up the one-to-one quick appointments.
That's almost like a networking thing, isn't it? Sounds like a network for the patients, if you know what I mean, as in, oh, I've got this problem, oh, I've done this kind of thing. You're almost sharing patient knowledge, or, you know, whatever the ailment may be, but you've obviously got the expert in the room who's almost the nurse is almost the coordinator of a networking group.
Yeah, the nurses act as like the facilitator. Yeah. The experts in the room are the people that are living with the condition.
Yeah, exactly.
And patients often don't have the confidence to go off and manage everything. We do have patients that can do that, and we have others that, you know, really, really struggle and want more information. And this creates time and space for the nurses, and it's less pressurized. If you're seeing patients in a 10-minute slot, you can't possibly address with the best girl in the world, you know, how people are feeling. You know, if somebody's really, really poorly or they've had a bereavement, I mean, how can you possibly address all that plus all the long-term conditions in a 10-minute appointment?
Yeah.
It's a real, real struggle.
It's very difficult, especially if people have more than one issue these days.
Yes, yeah.
It's not just like one issue they're coming in to see a GP for or a nurse. They're coming in for many issues sometimes, especially as we get older and people are living longer and drugs improve and things like that as well. You know, I have no idea you do it.
Absolutely. So we have that model in outpatients, and we have allied healthcare professionals involved with that. So we have a physio locally in Salford who's leading that. And as I say, we're seeing some of the evidence, the UK evidence, come through for this model. So it's well renowned internationally, but it's not been tried and tested as robustly in the UK. And Karen Story, who's our amazing national primary care lead, has really been supportive with all the practice nurses and said, yeah, I get this. I get that we need to create some time and space for both nurses and patients. Let's get a formal evaluation. So she's looking at that with Peel University. So watch this space.
Well, it sounds like Greater Manchester doing a lot of innovative work. So, do you have any overview of other parts of the country and how they're getting on in the, you know, in that primary care community space?
Yeah, I think it varies, Adrian, tremendously. I think we're at an advantage in Greater Manchester. So just going back to your point previously about the primary care networks, working in populations of 30 to 50K, Greater Manchester have been doing that for the last few years. That's our care model. So we have those local relationships built and collaborations built. That could be very similar in many parts of the country, but not everywhere. So some sort of teams feel like they are starting from scratch. So for example, we know who our district nurses are. We know them by name, we can pick up the phone. In other parts of the UK, the GP practice may be in one locality, the district nursing base may be in another. And if you don't have those relationships and that integrated care, it's quite difficult to work in that collaborative way, isn't it?
No, agreed.
So, yeah, and I think it'd be interesting for you to speak to other primary care nurses and sort of get their view on that.
We'd love to hear from some more, so by all means, introduce us. And obviously, you know, you've seen some changes over the last sort of 4 or 5 years. Are you seeing much of an impact from a technology perspective?
Yes, I've been involved in technology in nursing from probably about 2013. So one of the things that our practice offers, we don't offer online consultations yet. So that's not to say we won't do. But we do encourage something called patient access to records. So, and it's our nursing team that led that, and we're quite proud of that. So you've probably heard of a GP called Dr. Hanan, who pioneers that at his surgery and up and down the country. And he approached me a few years ago and he said, you know, I think this would be really beneficial for your patients so that they can look at their records, they can self-care, they can check their consultations with their GPs or their nurses, you know, and actually save a few appointments at the surgery and improve health literacy. And digital skills. And, you know, we've got a small proportion of patients that we've managed to achieve that for. And it's really good because patients will come in and say, oh, you know, I've just checked my cholesterol today online and I can see that there's an improvement. And that gives patients a real boost. You know, they can check on the EMIS system, which is the system that we use in general practice, and track their blood pressures, you know, and sort of sending that information to us. So in terms of technology, that's the enabler. Mm-hmm. And it's the relationships that help that to work.
And is that sort of wellness piece or that preventative piece? So yeah. Is the education, I know sometimes I talk to nurses and say, actually, it's not when they get to the hospital that's a problem. It's the education to try and stop them coming to the hospital by checking bloods and cholesterol and healthy diets and exercise. And, you know, I know there's a big movement of that in the US, but that seems to be a lot more talking about that in the UK now as well.
Yeah, well, one of the things that we talk about, I'm also an advisor for an organisation called NHS Alliance, and Heather Henry, who's one of my mentors, brought me in a few years ago. And one of the things that they talk about is, which is evidence-based, is the three C's. So control, contact and confidence. And we know from what patients tell us, those are the three ingredients, if you like, that they need. So when it comes to technology, I think we can all be a little bit nervous, can't we, about, is this going to work?
Definitely.
am I going to be able to Skype this person tomorrow? And I think in terms of technology, that is the thing that nurses can offer patients, the three C's, control, contact and confidence. You know, and we don't need to rush the process because we know the patient, you know, it has to be an explicit consent process. And patients have got to feel happy with the information that we share. So one of our GPs talked about responsible sharing. People don't want to see everything, do they? And others do. So nobody's the same and everybody's an individual.
No, I agree. And, you know, you talked about when you went into the nursing profession many years ago. You were talking about the, you know, you went in as an 18-year-old. Obviously, nurses going into the profession now with the removal of the bursary in England.
Yes, I could not have survived, you know, without that wage. And I really hope that the Department of Health, the Secretary of State, looks at this seriously. You know, nursing applications are down. It's really, really challenging career. You know, to go in and do a full degree, some nurses have got families, they've got, you know, financial commitments at home. And, you know, we're 40,000 nurses short in this country. We need to encourage them, nurture them into the profession, the great profession that nursing is. So I absolutely hope that there is a complete U-turn on the bursary issue.
Because they're still covering it in Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland, and we're not covering it in England.
They are, and they're seeing the data come through, and they're seeing the increase in the numbers.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I suppose the challenge in nursing, and I probably never appreciated it till I maybe did some more of these interviews, was you have to do, was it a couple of thousand worth of hours?
Yes.
As part of your degree, so it's not like you can just have a part-time job. You know, if you're going to do a business course, you know, you do 6 hours a week and you can get a job and kind of muggle it around, but you can't do that in nursing. And you might be travelling and you might be moving around as well. So it's like, it's not the same as a normal degree. So you don't even have the opportunity to earn
That's right.
a side job as well. Yeah. Without the bursary, you know, it seems not impossible.
Yeah. And there's nothing worse than coming off nights and thinking, I must start that assignment. it is different to other professions. So to compare like to like with other undergraduates, I think is highly unfair.
No.
And I do think we really need to pull out all the stops. You were talking about recruitment retention. Is there an answer? There isn't one answer. I think it's an accumulation of little things that will help. But the bursary is certainly a significant leveler.
No, I agree. And we're also a channel about nursing. You know, where do you see nurses in sort of the overall future in the healthcare space?
I think they're leaders. Absolutely. I talk about practice nurses and district nurses, school nurses as a healthcare leaders at home, you know, because they see things that others don't. So primary and community care, you know, people don't want to be in hospital if they ever can help it. We're going to see more patients discharged earlier, and that's that's an issue in itself, because we have to be safe. Sometimes hospital is the best place if you're really quite critically ill. But if we can get you home safely and we can get more nurses into the community space, we're more likely, you know, to keep you safe and well at home. So our ethos in Greater Manchester, yes, we've got to treat health needs, health issues, but we've also got to look at wellness and keeping people well. So going back to your prevention, you know, encouraging people with that behaviour change. So we've got to swim upstream, haven't we? And not just keep looking at the cause.
Agreed. Louise, thank you so much for your time today. I really do appreciate it. Is there any message you'd like to pass on to our nurses or anyone watching this?
No, I want to say a big thank you and hello to my patients and to all the primary and community nurses out there. And thank you for having me, Adrian. It's been a pleasure.
Very, very welcome. Thank you for watching The Voice of Nursing. Thank you to all our nurses, carers, allied health professionals and doctors who look after us always. And we'll catch up with you again soon. Thank you.